You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne, Justin Davis,
Scoop,
and Mark Medina joins us this week.
I'm here, Damon. What a week. What a week to be on Scoop.
What a week, and what a great show we have for you this week, although our main topic is not that great. We'll talk about this completely baffling decisions coming out of Xbox, closing Arcane Austin, closing Tango Gameworks. It just seems a little bit insane to me. There's also the new Nintendo World Championships NES edition, which I'm excited about, and we'll go over in just a bit. But first, we've been telling you about IGN Live happening next month, June 7th to the 9th, here in Los Angeles. Now I can share. So they're going to be live productions of all your favorite IGN shows. Most importantly, for Scoop Nation, I can share that Game Scoop Live will be on Sunday the 9th. It's going to be the last thing of the day, the big finale, if you will. I always love doing Game Scoop in front of a live audience. If you've been to our PAX panels before, you know, we always bring a good time, and we haven't done it since before the pandemic. So I'm super excited to scoop with fans in front of a live audience again. That's going to be super fun. So you can get tickets at IGN.com/live, and that's next month, June 7th to 9th, here in LA. I hope to see many of Scoop Nation there. Let's get into the show. Sam, until today, I had never heard of Animal Well, but it's getting great reviews everywhere, and people seem to be really excited about this game. What is Animal Well?
I tried to get you to play Mini Shoot, that's right.
Yeah.
Animal Well is a Metroid style game. It has a kind of an old PC maybe looking
this is
graphical.
It?
Yes.
That's it.
Just like our thumbnails don't look like this, but okay.
Yeah. So you're a blob.
Yeah.
That's the least interesting part of the game, and you have very little abilities. You can jump. But then you you get other abilities in the form of power-ups, and as you know, one does in a Metroid game. Those allow you to get new areas and kind of return to areas and do other stuff. But it's not as Metroid-y in the sense that, like, you can choose one of the four corners of the world to go to, more like Mega Man, like kind of like sort that out and then go back and do other. There's no like direct order to do stuff in, but you do need these four tools to, like, there might be more tools to do the most of the stuff in the game. In fact, if I would have watched this trailer before I played the game, what I just saw there, blowing those bubbles, would have solved a long night of figuring out how to get around a room on a Frisbee when I actually just need the bubbles. Because there's alternate solutions. There's the Frisbee right there. Again, that's a big puzzle solution right there.
Wow.
It's hard to figure out. So
it's...
go ahead.
Just like Fez and The Witness are two examples of like sometimes you can just do stuff, but the game doesn't tell you you can do stuff. And then you learn later on that you can do stuff. And so it's got that element of like peeling back, like there's secrets hiding in plain sight, but you don't know about it until it's recontextualized later.
Yeah. And so it does, you know, it's got that kind of gameplay hook of like, I was in this room and I couldn't solve it, so I'm going to come back later. But it is pretty hard to keep track of the rooms and like, you know, how to get back to them and stuff like that. It gets a little easier once you unlock some map tools. But like a lot of the stuff is very unexplained and you're like, oh, I feel like an idiot. I could have done this in a different way, or I could come back to this place that I can't remember where it is and do this now. Like there's a lot of stuff like that. So it's not like Prince of Persia where it's not like that, because in that game it really emphasized you getting better at platforming and starting to feel godlike you know, by the end of that game. This kind of emphasizes the kind of like, oh, you're getting really good at it's figuring out this game's language, this game's puzzles, like what is hidden in plain sight. And a lot of that is obscured by its pixel art, which is like cool. You know, it's not beautiful, it's ugly and
I think it looks awesome.
Scary and weird, but like, you know, it's intentionally so, right? But it has like it has more colors and really great lighting than any game ever did in the past. So like it doesn't look like a Super Nintendo game. It looks like a brand new game that's using little squares to draw it, right? Mm-hmm. And then the animal thing. So the animal thing is that the whole cave, it also is very like Cave Story. Like that's a game that like immediately came to mind when I was seeing this. Like this is Cave Story, you know. Like it has that feeling. Although Cave Story really comes to its own with
what has just happened. This is not the game, right?
This is Ghostwire Tokyo.
Why is it? And Red Bull.
But Cave Story, you know, it does have a lot more platforming and getting around. You get a jetpack in that game, right? So like you do, and shooting and stuff like that. You don't have to do any combat in this game at all either. So there's no combat. There's no jumping. There's just puzzle solving. So the animal part is that there's just weird integrations of real life animals and like these ghostly or sometimes corporeal form. It's interesting. There's like an ostrich area. There's an ostrich area, you know, or like an area with cats and cages, and you're like, well, how do I get these kitties out and stuff like that? So you know, the animals are generally evil. They're not helpful, but they're everywhere and a little bit spooky. That's Animal Well.
Dude.
You gave it a 9. I think, you know, you might, if you play a lot of Metroidvanias, you might not be as up on this game, but this is a Metroidvania and you don't play those and you want to play, I don't know, a weird twist on them and you haven't played them a whole lot, this is a really good one.
Well, I think it looks awesome. And it's on PlayStation Plus, so I will definitely, I'm going to check it out tonight. I've gotten to the point where I'm a little bit, I feel like I'm going crazy with Balatro. It's all I'm playing, and I cannot beat the red deck. And like,
which one's red again?
It's like a week straight of just like trying to beat this one deck, and I can't do it, and it's all I'm playing, and I'm starting to feel crazy. So I think I need a break.
Refresh my memory. Which one's the red one?
You have one extra discard.
Oh, I really like that. That might have been the first one that I cleared, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people say it's the hardest one. I don't know. But I can't unlock my next deck until I beat this particular deck. So I just.
That's annoying. Mm.
So the Animal Well is not the only animal game that came out today, though. Little Kitty Big City came out today as well.
Yeah. That seems like a little bit more lighthearted Stray.
I played it.
Yeah. Okay.
For 5 minutes or more, maybe 10 minutes. And it's cool because I believe it's set in Japan. It must be, or maybe it's Korea. It's something Japan-like because like you immediately, you know, escape the environs of your house and it looks like, you know, Katamari Damacy everywhere. And you're like, oh, this is not America. But it is really, really cool to like explore a tiny Japanese, you know, town as a black cat. My favorite type of cat. I have a black cat. And I've always had black cats. And I really, really like the vibe of this game so far.
It kind of looks like
Goose
Game.
You definitely start. It is, yeah. It has that kind of obviously you're wrecking shit up like that. This is the premise right here,
which is really
scary. It's like, how high is that cat up when this happens? You know, but then
oh my gosh,
it cuts to how that's possible.
It seems like they handle cat jumping the way Stray does.
Yeah, right? It's really funny. There's like, you know, the cat compensates for your misses in very funny ways. Like you can jump or you can like stop and plan a jump. And the cat does the little swishy tail, like about to jump, like then while you're doing that.
Yep.
And then if you execute it a little bit wrong, the cat's like scrabble, 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 and like makes it work. You know, like it kind of makes that kind of that cat ability to survive an element. Of
anyway, can't wait to play more. That's what cats do. They make it work.
Yeah. Oh, and it hates water. There you go. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Water is death.
Also hates Shivas. Dogs are death. Yep. Is this on any of the subscription? Is this on that Game
it
Pass?
It is. You can just play it on Xbox Game Pass right now.
Cool.
Yeah. Man.
All right, then. Two
fun times, right?
Two new cool-looking indie games. A good excuse to give Balatro a break for me.
There is a cool third indie game.
Oh,
this
my
week.
Gosh.
Hades,
what
Hades
is it?
Hades 2.
Yeah, and yeah. Yeah.
Hades but, 2 is so good.
I mean, yes, but relegated to PC.
Yeah.
I've
yeah.
heard that game
early access.
Is too sexy.
The first
really?
One was also too sexy. I heard that from
Houston. They made
another?
I heard that. Yeah, it's not my quote.
It's really good, though. I don't know if anyone's playing it. I've done nothing but get off of work, and I just play Hades until I go to bed. I have it on Steam Deck, and it is very, very fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like an early access game. It feels completely feature complete, but I've heard this ending, and I haven't.
I was gonna say there's no it's missing an act, so
yeah,
I wouldn't say
missing like the boss I can't get past yet. So
I see.
So far, so good.
But, I love how it kind of appeared. You know, it was like, hey, we're gonna do an early access game. Everybody's like, oh, is this gonna be, you know, a full fledged one? Or are we just gonna get a little taste before this? And then everybody's just playing Hades all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's real fun.
Yeah, I love the original. I look forward to playing this one of these days. Okay. By now, surely everyone out there in Scoop Nation has heard the news this week. Microsoft surprise closed the developer of Redfall, Arkane Austin, also the developer of Prey, and Tango Gameworks, developers of Evil Within 1 and 2, Ghostwire Tokyo, and more recently, Hi-Fi Rush. Absolutely insane, I think.
Yeah.
Because, like, the you know, sure, Redfall was a debacle, but Prey wasn't. Yeah. People love Prey. And they had Harvey Smith, who was the director of both Dishonored 1 and 2. Like, what?
Yeah,
like, so
I mean, they made...
They just let him go. Like, Xbox has no use for that developer. Like, we have no use for you, director of Dishonored 1 and 2. Get out of here.
I don't know the specific details. I guess I should have looked them up before I came on here to talk. But the studios are... Yeah. I didn't know what we were going to talk about. The studios are closed, but some of them are being relegated to other studios.
Yeah.
Like, so they're not letting all of the talent go, technically. But I don't know what the, like... I don't know what the breakdown for that is. Like the studio that Roundhouse or whatever, the one that did Mighty Doom, like that studio is closed and they're on like ESO now. Like that's just how that is.
I mean, Dishonored, this is the team, and you know, Damon, I know that you're just naming off their most recent couple games, but like this is the company that made Dishonored 1. Like they made one of the greatest video games of all time, and a lot of that talent is still there.
Yeah.
And like, you know, okay, yes, Prey, you know, underperformed commercially. Redfall was, you know, kind of a disaster. But, like, you have to be able to... What is the point of having a parent company or a publisher if not to be able to, you know, support a company and guide them through to their next hit after they have...
Or smooth out the depressions to make sure the heights are higher, right?
That is...
And you can't... We can't exist in an environment where every single game has to be a mega hit. Yeah. Otherwise, you can't justify your employment. Like, that's not how, you know, creative endeavors work.
Yeah.
Well, no. And there's a thing where Redfall was in trouble long before any of us knew. And the story goes that when they were bought by Xbox, Arkane Austin had this glimmer of, they're going to let us cancel this and we don't have to make it anymore. Like we can make something we actually want to make. And Xbox did not let them do that. So they needed to finish Redfall and it came out and then they got punished for it. And it's like, you could kind of chalk, you know, there's two sides of that coin on who's actually at fault there, but it's like they did make a game that is not good, but they knew it wasn't good years and years ago and were forced to make it anyway. So
I think that Xbox is in a situation where the general narrative is, these meddling executives, right? Like, yeah, we don't want notes. Like, we want to be left alone. We want to be able to make our thing. But, like, mm-hmm, Xbox seems like they should have meddled more. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, I think they've been too hands-off with, yeah, too many projects and then kind of gotten themselves in this sustained bit of trouble. Like, they bought everybody. They bought so, mm-hmm, much stuff and have kind of nothing to show for it. And this is not my quote. I apologize. I don't remember who said this. But, you know, an analyst discussed it as like the eye of Sauron is now on the Xbox division, mm-hmm, after they spent $80 billion, mm-hmm, on Call of Duty, where like prior to that, no one really cared that much what Xbox was up to. Like, they're making money, they're making video
you
games.
You mean as part of Microsoft?
Yeah.
As part, mm-hmm, of Microsoft, correct. Yeah. Whereas now, like, that's what makes me so incensed, is they spent $80 billion in one of the biggest corporate acquisitions in history, in any industry ever, of all time. And then, you know, as a result, these people that made award-winning games all lost their job. Like, it's the worst.
Someone allowed Phil Spencer to write that check. And it's just like, I don't know. It's just, they can't stop stepping on rakes, man. I really don't know what to say about Xbox at this point. Like, there's this whole, like, there's been this cult of 10 years of, like, the games are coming. And then, yeah, they've done all these acquisitions. And there's just nothing to show for it. Starfield, a fine game, right? I didn't really like it. Fine. But like, Starfield,
a fine game.
But the issue is they needed Starfield to be more than fine, and it was just fine.
Yeah.
And then there's just been like nothing since then. And the thing is like, if you want to look at the PlayStation side, what do gamers care about? Do they care about first party, or do they care about like exclusive games that they can play on their platform? And so, no defense to PlayStation, the fact that we don't know what their studios are working on. Maybe I'll applaud them the fact that they're not announcing things too early. But PlayStation has still done given their players, the owners of their consoles, great exclusives every single month this year, right? Stellar Blade, Final Fantasy, Helldivers. And it's just like, where are they? Where are these games? And there's so many people that are just like, wait for the June showcase. Dude, we can't just always be waiting for the next showcase. Where the fuck are the games, bro? Like, it's ridiculous.
But then they release them and everyone loves them in the case of Hi-Fi Rush. And, you know, but then it doesn't make Microsoft any money because they're on Game Pass. And so, right, you know, like they're really in a spot right now.
But like, where it should be like a feather in their cap. Like, they released this, you know, well-received game, critically adored.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it has like a cult following, it's like the thing to me, both of these developers, Arcane Awesome and Tango Gameworks, are the exact type of developers that should be safe underneath the umbrella of Microsoft that has all the money in the world, because they make good games for the most part. Maybe they're not like, you know, tens of millions sellers, but they're good games that have an audience that they love. A lot of people write in and say they love the Evil Within games, you know? It's like, that's the exact type of developer. Even if they have a misstep, even if they have a Redfall now and then, or a, you know, Ghostwire Tokyo, they should be safe underneath the umbrella of Microsoft.
Well, and they're trying to raise their presence in Japan, and they closed their only Japanese studio? Like, come on, man. There's I don't get it, man.
Did you guys see the kind of the leaked internal email that was explaining the decisions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that they want to refocus on high-impact games, right?
Yeah, so, like, you know, there's no silver lining here, right?
Yeah.
But what that is implying is that, you know, there'll be more resources, I presume, put into Elder Scrolls and Fallout, right? Like, the games that, like, we all really want.
And Call of Duty.
There's no way. Like, there's, like, that's going to increase the rapidity of getting Elder Scrolls in the next, 3 to 5 years? Like, it'll be 3 to 5 years, right, for that. Fallout's got to be 5. Like, it'd be amazing if, like, Microsoft could do a bunch of decision making, especially without firing a bunch of people, that could be like, we're going to increase the development of our core games, get them out. But even evil stuff like this is not going to do that. Yeah. He's just not going to do it, you know?
I mean, it recontextualized, like, them owning Call of Duty and owning World of Warcraft and Overwatch recontextualizes, like, what a successful game looks like, right? Like, you know, you need to be working on a product that's going to sell 25 million units, you know, and, like, that's not Redfall, that's not Deathloop, right? Like, you know, awesome, that's not... Yeah, they're all, like, it doesn't matter that they're an awesome game, you know, right? Like, ultimately...
Who made Deathloop?
Arcane Lyon.
The other Arcane.
So presumably they're going to do Blade.
They're doing Blade.
They will be doing, if Dishonored ever gets a game again, a Dishonored game will not be coming from the original Dishonored team. Is that how it works now?
Yeah, they worked on Dishonored 2, but yeah, the Lyon studio is the only one left.
Doing the DLC and stuff also.
Mm-hmm. I think the weird, like, kind of depressing thing about just, like, the industry is, like, there's a survivor's guilt of not being laid off when other studios are laid off, but then that's also mixed with, like, but am I next, right? And that's cast this, like, weird shadow on everything in development right now on Xbox, right? Hellblade 2 is just straight up not being marketed right now. Xbox put out a tweet yesterday that was just, like, they just said the game title, the date it releases, and then, like, an old image. It was just like Hellblade 2 May 21, and all the comments are like, you get nothing new. And the top comment on that thread is someone being like, here's the link to the store page, since they didn't bother to do that. And it's like, what happens to Ninja Theory if this doesn't become this huge thing? What happens to Obsidian if Avowed is just fine and The Outer Worlds 2 is just fine? Like, it creates this doubt that any studio is safe.
And again, like, that's where like the publisher, I do feel for Xbox and their position as a publisher, because Hellblade 2, like, this game has got to be years late, right? So, like, you know, like, you can't, they're stuck in a situation where they need to let creatives be creatives and make amazing things, you know, and take the time to get them right. But they also can't just open up their piggy bank endlessly and, like, let people take years to release a game that, like there's no world in which Hellblade 2 recoups its development cost. I shouldn't say no world, but that seems highly unlikely. Right,
it's a $50 game that's been in development for 8 years.
It's crazy.
Like, and it's coming to Game Pass day one.
It's Game Pass. It's a single player 8-hour game. You know, it's not going to be Helldivers 2. It's not going to sell 25 million copies. It's just not. So,
I can't wait for it. But, like,
same.
It'll be done by the weekend for the most part. Like, and people can play things at their own leisure. But, like, exactly what you're saying. Like, it's not going to keep paying dividends. People have Game Pass, they're going to download it, they're going to play it, and then, you know, you're just never going to think about it again. I don't know. Game Pass is... Sorry, go ahead.
Like, should we be worried about Double Fine? I am.
I mean, every Xbox studio should be worried. Like,
and so, again, I do understand the dollars and cents perspective of, like, they're spending too much money, right? They got to spend less money. So, okay, like, you know, they have a layoff, but, like... But it has this downstream impact on their ability to do business for years to come. They're never going to be able to buy another Double Fine again, because who would sell to them?
Yeah.
Like, why would you sell your business to them if, like, you know, you don't get any upside from being a part of that family?
Mm-hmm. I also do think that, like, quantity is a little important for them right now, in addition to quality. So it's like, it is interesting that they had until this week three studios that were capable of producing hit games, and it's like, set them on the right track, invest there, and maybe things will go great. But now they just will have, you know, a year with, like, a really sad fall again, because they will have too few games out. Like, that's hard to solve. That problem is hard to solve. They had to buy a bunch of studios to solve that problem, and now they're, you know, like, making that problem worse again.
Yeah. I try to think back of, I think you guys remember E3 2019 when they did the shopping spree, like, showcase, where it was like, that's when they bought Ninja Theory and they bought all these studios. Like, we're still waiting to see the fruits of that purchase. And that was in 2019. Yeah. And then now they've bought ABK, and it's like, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know. What remains to be seen is whether or not Call of Duty will show up on Game Pass. I really don't think it does. I don't think that they can afford to put a game that keeps an entire publisher afloat, they can't afford to just give that away for free. And that is kind of the thing with Game Pass, is that the games are free because it's so cheap, you know? Like,
I mean, I think that it's like you think about, like, so 343, Halo Infinite, like, I don't know if you'd call it a flop. Definitely didn't have the impact that Microsoft wanted, right? Like, you know, the Coalition is probably heads down on Gears of War, but that's been years. You know, I don't know what Double Fine's working on. The Initiative's been working on Perfect Dark. That is years late. Like, you know, Obsidian, I actually really like Avowed, but I feel like I'm the only person that does. Like, that project doesn't seem to have a tremendous amount of buzz behind it. Like, aren't we years late on a new State of Decay? Like, so I don't know who to blame. Like, you know, is this just some perfect storm of, like, bad news upon bad news for every studio that Microsoft, you know, acquired? Or, again, should they have been more bad cop, you know, and more of a parent to these acquisitions? But like they bought so many studios, and the output is just not there right now.
What if Rare just laid off crazy. And they said, make an Elder Scrolls game in 2 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Fallout. Yeah, I think what's hard is when you look at the, like, kind of more. Even the 2019 acquisition spree is like, you kind of think to yourself, like, oh, okay, these are maybe, like, recent missteps, but, like, I mean, Xbox has been fumbling since 2013, right? Since the Xbox One reveal. And
none of those games are still out. Like, they're all so chronically delayed. Like, no State of Decay, you know, like, Halo Infinite, no Gears of War.
Fable.
No Perfect Dark.
Perfect Dark.
No Fable.
Fable. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about Fable.
I was convinced that Fable would be a this year game. Like, how does that fall so behind? It's like, it's Fable. Like, just put out a linear Fable that people like or something. Like, what are you doing?
Hellblade was revealed.
How big are these games?
Yeah, Hellblade was revealed in December of 2019.
Yep, Game Awards.
Or Hellblade 2.
Hellblade 2.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was revealed at the Xbox One reveal event.
And so this is where I don't give them a pass. I'm very upset and kind of incensed by this. But, like, in that kind of environment, like, it becomes untenable. Their balance sheet must be right. And so I don't want to carry water for them in this situation. But, like, you know, lay off studio closures. Like, that's what happens in this kind of environment.
Where's the light at the end of the tunnel? That's like where I'm curious, because that's like, it's like, it was
to Justin's point. I think people are going to be like, no, we don't want to be bought by you.
Well, yeah, because it's like,
then it's a big risk and a big reward. Mm-hmm. But the risk is that you just have to close your own studio, which is like, at least it's self-determined.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll say this. I don't like it.
Yep. Yeah.
Ah, the return of my favorite segment.
Yeah, I'm console agnostic. I just like games. I like my Xbox Series X. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this news just makes me feel, for the first time in a long time, I just feel a little bit uneasy about the future of Xbox. I don't know. There's that conference coming up next month. Maybe they'll announce more games that we won't be playing for years and years.
Yay.
But we'll see.
And I do, like, speaking for myself, I mean, I know that you're all in this position too. It's like, I have a real affinity for, you know, Xbox as a brand and a lot of Xbox franchises. And that's where, like, these feelings of, like, for me come from. It's like, you know, Halo is my shooter franchise of choice. The 100%. Xbox Series X actually remains my console of choice.
Me too.
You know? And so, like, it's just disappointment, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it is. It's a bummer.
Let's move on to a happier topic. We've been demanding Nintendo bring back NES Remix for years, and they kind of brought it back with the Nintendo World Championships NES Edition. This is a new game with sort of mini challenges from 13 NES games, over 150 challenges across 13 different NES games, with Mark speedrun mode.
Yay, let's go. Yeah, I saw they were even using, like, the live split font and everything. Like, it looks great. I thought this was, like, really... they were releasing, I thought they were like releasing the old cartridge, like just like
the valuable one.
The actual original like NES World Championship cartridge. And then I saw it, and it's like it's all new UI and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, they're playing on that, but it's a whole new thing.
Yeah. I think that this is so cool, and this is exactly what I want from like a late stage, you know, Nintendo console.
That's
right?
What
like,
happened look, with the like, Wii U,
this is,
right?
And this is a filler game, right? And I don't mean that as a pejorative, but like that's what
that's
it is.
Fine.
Yeah, like if this is the kind of filler game we get from Nintendo to bridge the gap because their console was delayed a year, like it's so perfect. It's awesome. Love
Yo,
it.
Yo, when does this come out?
July 18th.
Dang it.
2 months.
Yeah. I know.
We're doing stuff like this at IGN Live, and I'm like spinning my wheels right now. Oh, that's too bad. That'd be so fun.
That's the special edition, which you pre-ordered, right, Sam?
Oh, yeah. Although I told you already that I was really... It does come with this like kind of cool physical cart-looking thing. And again, I will never open this. It will just stay in my closet.
Is the cartridge, is it just like a statue? Like it's just nothing?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think we even know.
That's for my distant relatives to find out when they dig it out of my my vault.
Sure.
But
what's the opposite of ancestor?
In Japan...
What are your future relatives called?
Descendants.
Okay, thank you.
So, there, the Famicom, the one that's coming out in Japan, the version of this comes with two freaking controllers for the same price as we're getting without any controllers in it, and they're like Famicom style, like gold and red controllers, and they're really cool. Mm-hmm. But it's great to get a physical edition. Of course, it's really cool to see this like this logo reused by Nintendo. I like everything about this. You remember like 5 years ago they revisited World Championships and they did a little stunt around E3 where they made World Championship shirts and stuff. Like this is like an inside joke at Nintendo. Is like amazing that it's turning out a video game at this point and like they're using this so much. I just think it's the coolest thing. I wonder who's developing it, because like this is an American thing, all right?
You think
they do not have the Nintendo World Championships outside of the North America. And the cartridge was used at these, you know, championships in one form and then given away to winners in another. They're NES cartridges, not Famicom cartridges, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like always been like an NES North American thing. It's really cool though, and like it's a manufactured collectible, so it's not actually going to be worth anything. But it's just really neat to have a physical presence of in any sense of Nintendo World Championships. And if you want to see somebody's Nintendo World Championship cartridge that I've touched, you can watch my video with my buddy and neighbor Steve Lin, who brought his Nintendo World Championship cartridge into IGN. I don't know, maybe 8 years ago or so, and showed it off with some equally rare, cool things like the Stadium Events cartridge. And then I believe he brought in like some cool other things you were able to win way back in the day, like a DS Lite that was given away to one Pokemon championship winner. And there's only one of those, where there's 130, you know, Nintendo World Championship cartridges, like 30 gold ones, 100 gray ones. That's not exact.
I have an observation.
Okay.
I like that it's called, World Champion NES Edition. Mm-hmm. That has implications of future editions to come. They never do. And I also, dovetailing back to Xbox, like Nintendo and Japanese companies in general, you know, they never lay stuff off. They just don't. It's not in their culture. Mm-hmm. And so you have this continuity of, I think I've shared this anecdote before of like, the very first version of Mii's, like make a digital avatar for yourself that showed up on the Nintendo Wii was an N64 DD like thing. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, nah, it doesn't work. And then Nintendo just sat on it for like 20 years until they had the hardware and the console. And then they brought that out of the Nintendo vault and made it a thing. And like that continuity of like, there's people within the company that like, you know, remember that this was a thing and that had that old footage and they're able to do stuff like this that you can't do when you have staff turnover.
It's so, like they're nostalgic for something that to us is brand new. Because it's like, Nintendo's I remember that from 2 decades ago.
Did you all
ago.
See how old the people are in this commercial?
Yeah.
It's great. They've gotten so good at like, you know, Nintendo, the dark days of Nintendo and like, you know, the GameCube era was like, They did nostalgia in such a bad way, right? Like they were stuck. They were old school. They were kind of stuck in their ways. And now Nintendo does it with so much more of like a wink and a nod while also continuing to reinvent franchises like Zelda. Like they've gotten to a good place of like speaking to the elder gamers and the younger gamers, I would say.
Mm-hmm. It was revealed recently with some of Nintendo's financials that the Switch era for Nintendo, just the Switch era, is more profitable than everything before. From the NES to
really?
Super Nintendo
the Wii?
To... Yes, yes. Wow. Everything before doesn't add up to just the Switch era.
Hey, if people out there really have no idea what Nintendo World Championships are, there's a great documentary called The Wizard that you can watch in 1990. It follows the travails of a young boy and Fred Savage who go to... California and compete in the Nintendo World Championships and get to meet Super Mario Brothers 3 for the first.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you get to see the Power Glove. It's so bad.
It's so bad. I do want to point out though, so 150 challenges across 13 games, but NES Remix had 16 games and over 200 challenges.
Oh no, they left off NES Pinball.
So this game list is Balloon Fight, Donkey Kong, Excitebike, Ice Climber, Kid Icarus, Kirby's Adventure, Metroid, Super Mario Brothers 1, 2, 3, and Lost Levels, and The Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2.
Yeah, so no volleyball, tennis, or slalom. You're going to be okay.
No golf.
Yeah.
No golf.
We're also missing the two other Donkey Kongs, Wrecking Crew, Punch-Out, and of course, Urban Champion.
Yeah, I do.
That better be an unlockable, is all I'll say.
I've heaped a lot of praise on this game in this segment, and I stand by it. But I do have a concern, you know, in the trailer, it shows that these challenges are like 30 seconds long.
Yeah.
You know, it's like maybe like let's generously assume they're a minute and there's 150 of them. I'm like, is this a 2-hour game?
WarioWare?
Is
that
what this is? Yeah. Yeah. Is this WarioWare, but without, you know, kind of all the cool stuff surrounding it?
No, because they had difficulty options.
Yeah.
That
to me, Yeah, I think the make or break is going to be like how much kind of like other junk is there surrounding those 150 challenges.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I also wonder like Nintendo's actual expectations when they do stuff like this, because like I don't remember NES Remix blowing the world up, but I also don't know if it intended to. So kind of wonder if like if this sells to the Sam Claibornes of the world, if they're enough, if that's enough for them. You know, they don't care if you actually think it's a good game or not.
Did the pre-orders sell out? That's all you would need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. The collector's edition sold out day one.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, there you go, Mark. They recouped their money.
They did it. They're good. They enjoy your 2-hour game. They don't care. They got your money.
Well, speaking of the NES, Mark, last week we were talking about how important video game titles are and how a lot of games today, especially indie games, if you just say the title, it just sounds like a bunch of words that don't mean anything together. Whereas back in the day...
Let me give you a good example of a title, Mark. Splatterhouse. Now, that's a game name.
Yep.
That's what it is. That's what you call a game,
that's
man.
Bionic Commando.
There's another one. Yeah, Asteroids.
Yep.
All right? You know what there's going to be in that game? It's a motherfucking asteroid.
Centipede.
Yes.
Man, I miss the Atari days where every game was just... Yeah, it's just the name of what that game is. Drag Race. Like, all right.
Adventure. It's...
I had mentioned that it would be cool to have a way to just remix all the titles, the words that are in the titles of NES games, into different combinations, and that would be all that you would need to make cool game names. And as expected, someone out there did it. I just say things and I can manifest them into the world.
Cool.
And so, GameScoop listener, I apologize. Our friend is in Finland. I don't speak a lot of Finnish. Awesome. His name, I believe, is Yussi. I think that's how it's pronounced, but apologies if I'm mispronouncing that. He emailed us at gamescoop@ign.com, just like you can. He says, so I went and implemented the NES game name generator idea from your latest show. Sadly, it's a Python script rather than a web page, so you need to do a little work if you want to run it yourself. Well, I have no idea what that means. But there are some examples, pre-made examples on the page here. And I'll share them with you to prove my point. So, Mighty Hoops, Mighty Rivals.
That's great.
That is a game name.
Right? Mighty 100%. Hoops, Mighty Rivals. So good.
It would be the sequel to Hoops Rivals.
Yep.
Mighty Hoops, Mighty Rivals.
Yep. There's Snake Hammerin'. Yeah. And hammer some
that's
snakes.
That's like hammering, like when you had to hammer some snakes. Yeah, it's like better whack-a-mole. Than snake rattle and roll.
I like this one. Revenge marble.
These are really good.
You know, the revenge marble is in Marvel Madness, so it could follow the saga of that revenge marble. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
this
good.
Is a really, this is a really good one. Kung Fu Hogan's F-15. Kung Fu Hogan's F-15. Yep.
Yeah. Brought to you by Kung Fu Hogan.
Yep.
A pilot. Clearly a pilot. So you know what you're getting yourself into. Once you get out of that F-15, you're going to do some karate.
Yep. Yeah.
You're going to fight.
Right. Two more. Sinister POW. I presume a sequel to POW.
Yikes. Wow.
The first one.
Yeah, who did I pick up in my Jackal Jeep?
That's it.
Sinister POW.
Normally, you root for the POWs, yeah, but it's boy, a sinister not one. This time.
Yep. We did not liberate.
And finally, Duck Combat Baseball.
Right? I mean, play it. It explains itself.
I would play Duck Combat Baseball.
What?
There's
you don't have
the rule books that say ducks can't play combat baseball.
Nope.
You don't have to read the back of the box to understand what that game's about.
You get it.
You got it. Yeah.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Okay, it's time for a little extracurricular activity. Who's ready for a new Lord of the Rings movie? Directed by Andy Serkis and starring Andy Serkis. Lord of the Rings, The Hunt for Gollum.
I'm there for it.
Well, sure. I'm there for it, but it's also like, what? It's just like last year. It's just like that Lord of the Rings Gollum game.
Do you want Peter Jackson to do one? He had three more chances.
I don't know,
But I will
man.
Say that Beatles movie was unbelievably great. So maybe he's back on his game and he should be making Lord of the Rings movies. But hey, they start announcing some other ones, right? This is only
but
one
I don't,
of them.
They I don't think he's directing it, right? He's producing it.
Yeah, that's part of our news story is that they previously have said more Lord of the Rings movies are coming. Mm.
There's one coming out this year, the War for the Rohirrim is coming out this year. Yeah, the animated one.
Is there a trailer for that?
I just haven't seen it.
Anyway, have you seen the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
What do you think?
I mean.
No, I mean you
so. Okay. Of course not.
Well, they're great.
I'll sit this one out.
I brought the source material to GameScoop, and I can read it in about 30 seconds. So, in the end of Return of the King, there's some appendices, right? And Appendix B is a timeline, so it has entries like 3002. Bilbo becomes a guest of Elrond and settles in Rivendell. That's an example of what's happening. So around that time, there's a few entries in this that are not explored in the books. They're just part of Tolkien's notes to keep track of things. And in 3009, so 7 years after Bilbo has paid a visit to Elrond, it says, Gandalf and Aragorn renew their hunt for Gollum at intervals during the next 8 years, searching in the vales of Anduin, Mirkwood, and Rovanion to the confines of Mordor. And they show that in the beginning of Lord of the Rings. They show Gollum's been wandered into Mordor and he gets captured. He screams Shire Precious, right? And then, or Shire Baggins.
Yeah.
And then it says, at some time during these years, Gollum himself entered into Mordor and was captured by Sauron. Elrond sends for Arwen and then she returns to Imladris. The mountains and all the lands eastward are becoming dangerous. And then it says, the next entry is 3017. Gollum is released from Mordor. He is taken by Aragorn in the Dead Marshes and brought to Thranduil in Mirkwood, who is, Legolas's father. And then Gandalf visits Minas Tirith and reads the Scroll of Isildur, which they also show in Lord of the Rings, right?
Yes.
So this is what's happening. We're going to see this era in which Aragorn is hunting Gollum. And that's why it's called The Hunt for Gollum, just from these two paragraphs that exist. And, maybe some notes elsewhere. So they'll explore that. Now, what's notable to me, and clearly I can talk about this all day, is that those were already portrayed by actors that exist. And they're not of different ages now. They should be Viggo Mortensen should be Aragorn. He was already 80 by that time, right?
Yeah.
It'll be weird. They're going to cast young Aragorn. Gandalf is clearly a big part of this. Who are they going to cast for Gandalf? Yeah. What's happening?
I gotta say, watching B-roll for this 2 out of 10 game ain't making me hype for this movie.
It just sounds like the game, Lord of the Rings Gollum. It's the same.
Anyway,
thing.
I'm super into it.
I mean, I hate it. It's the IPification of everything. Where,
well, the Amazon show, you gotta admit, was getting there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and so, like, look, like, you know, Andy Serkis's portrayal of Gollum is incredible, yes, and storied for a reason. And he has gone on to be, you know, he's been honing his directing chops, you know, in the decades since. So, like, the creative team, yes, but, like, the creative impulse of, like, this is a story we need to tell does not seem to be very genuine to me. It seems to be kind of driven by profit. And this is a trilogy of books that they made an incredible trilogy of movies in. And, like, the unwillingness to just kind of let something be, like, that's it. Like, it's done. It, you know,
they're not just remaking it already?
it's not, you know, so it's like Warner Brothers, which, you know, Warner Brothers is like, you know, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, and DC Comics. That's like what they are, right? And they clearly want Lord of the Rings to be like those other two. You know, this transmedia thing that just never dies of, like, you know, none of us are ever going to live to see the final Star Wars movie. And I think Warner Brothers wants, you know, so they want it to be with Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And that really bums me out and distresses me. Like, they can't just, you know, like, it's symptomatic across everything of, like, they keep making Ghostbusters and, like, you don't need to. It's like that was a concept for one movie, and then it can be done.
Turns out we need another Twister movie, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
I love the first
one. What do you think, Damon? Are you into this?
I just don't know. Why Gollum? Like, Gollum, his story is told in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and it's perfect. I still get chills thinking of Gollum's final moments. Sorry, Mark.
Yeah.
You know, falling.
I've seen the cartoon.
Falling
is this his
lava.
Final moments?
He's falling into lava, but he's so happy because he finally has his precious. It's still like it's so good. I don't need to explore more of Gollum at a younger time. It's like, what?
Well, hopefully it's more of Aragorn and Gandalf plotting because it's hard to find Gollum, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully it's something like that.
I mean, it's kind of like that.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna rant some more.
I was just gonna say it's kind of like that thing though, where it's like, why Gollum? And it's like, the MCU is not in like the greatest of places right now, right? Yep. But and so to fix that, a lot of people say, well, we need Robert Downey, we need Iron Man back, we need Captain America back, right? But it's like those endings were so perfect, that it would just like ruin it to ever see Iron Man again. As much as I love him. It'd ruin this it, is, and that's what and they're doing, you know, according to Damon, is like they had this perfect send-off, but money. Mm-hmm. They need money.
It's absolutely but money, and it's going to have that prequel thing of like, well, okay, like nothing matters, or it's going to do the other equally cringy prequel thing. It's like, oh, well, there's some interlude that like we didn't – like they actually saved the day, but just nobody knew about it or ever talked about it again.
Yeah, the
you
right
know?
One.
And like both of those – I don't know, man. I'm getting all worked up. I need to just stop talking about it.
I do like – I really like New Zealand and Weta Workshop and all that part of Lord of the Rings. Yes, like I like that more than Amazon doing it. Mm-hmm. So like I'm very interested in the return to like all the behind the scenes stuff that you've seen, like armor crafting and getting a bunch of horses together and like beautiful shots of New Zealand. Like that's real good stuff that has nothing to do with, you know, anything other than just these people that nerd out over Lord of the Rings and live in New Zealand. Like that's cool.
Yeah.
I think that's neat.
I want them to make a Hobbit TV show, and I don't want there to be any conflict of any time. They're just doing Hobbit things and
dancing.
What about
that Shire game we're getting? That looks great.
Yeah, cozy Hobbit.
Smoking pipe weed and just hanging out. Mm-hmm. That's it.
They get into trouble sometimes, but it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything's always fine.
It's not
Nobody
real
ever gets
trouble.
Hurt.
But you know in 15 years, they're going to be like, the Great War of Bull Roarer Took. And it's going to be this like Hobbit war epic movie where he invented golf.
Oh, God. Yeah, they 100% are going to do that.
Well, I was kind of thinking about it. Planet of the Apes, I have not kept up with that. I've seen the first one, which is the, what's that actor's name? James Franco. Yeah. The new Planet of the Apes?
I have some bad news for you. That's not the first Planet of the Apes.
Well, I know that, but I mean, like, is that the movie that comes out today or whatever, is that part of that same series?
I think it's several, far in the future, I think.
Yeah, it's the same franchise. And the thing is, they all are really, really good. So it's like, you know, they have a creative, like, I'm not against, you know, creative arts making money, but like, what's driving it, right? Mm. Like this mix of kind of like, it's a commercial enterprise. And also we have a story we want to tell. Like, maybe that's going to be here for this.
What if this Planet of the Apes isn't really set on Earth?
They're invading.
Yeah,
maybe.
Well, in any case, Mark, you should watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Okay.
But don't watch the Hobbit trilogy.
All right.
No.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Oh, man. You're going to love it. You got to watch Fellowship tonight. I think they're streaming on HBO.
The issue is every time anybody brings up Lord of the Rings, they are like, you got to watch the extended editions. And well, it's
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
See,
I take that back. For your first time, you don't need to.
It doesn't matter.
I don't have time for that, man. I do, I don't want
the cinematic ones.
Hold on. Oh, you don't, Mister. I don't have time for it. Before we started recording this show, you said,
and that's why I said was, that's why I quickly said I do, but I don't wanna. I don't do anything with my life. I get off work and I just play video games, but I still don't want
to. And I quote, I log off of work and I play Hades until it's time to go to bed.
And then I get in bed and I play Hades on my Steam Deck until I literally just fall asleep.
All right. That brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from David from Omaha. But first, he has a question. He says, a few weeks ago, you had a spirited debate over what is licensed versus what isn't, and I thought of a bizarre example. I was curious whether or not this would be considered a licensed game. Street Fighter, the movie video game, is the one that popped into my head and was curious what the Scooperinos... Not going to accept that one. Think about this one. I don't believe it technically is a licensed game, but it's definitely in a weird gray area.
Yeah.
Okay, well, first of all, you don't take it to the panel to make a determine like that. You take it to the judge. You, the judge. You tell us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can have our thoughts. It's definitely a licensed game. I don't know if he wants a goof answer or a real answer. The real answer is who has to get paid, right? And in the case of Street Fighter the movie, it's got the actor licenses in it and stuff like that. They're likenesses. And so that's who... That it's a licensed game because it's based off the movie and the studio that made the movie and the actors.
Jean-Claude Van Damme makes an appearance in it.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, Van Damme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because Capcom didn't make that game. Right?
They might. Like, they probably did. Who knows?
I don't know. Like Street Fighter the movie, the game.
Like, that's where it gets weird. It's
like scenes from the movie on a disc that people pretended to play.
No, it's... Yeah.
I mean, making a joke. But it's like, you know... It's meant to look like, likenesses from the movie in a fighting game.
Capcom did make game, Mark.
Wow.
That is so weird. I mean, that throws a little bit of a weirdness into
Capcom
it.
Capcom would be
like,
oh yeah, Acclaim, please make the game based on the thing we invented. It has to be Capcom.
But Capcom didn't make the arcade game.
Right.
Of Street Fighter, the movie. That was made by Incredible Technologies.
Yeah, I bet that was a backwards port. Like, they probably made the console games, and then they...
Yeah, maybe. But they both came out the same year, so it's a little bit hard to tell. Actually, I think the arcade game predates the console game by a few months. But maybe just release first. Maybe they're...
I don't remember with arcade.
Maybe they're developed at the same time. Who knows? Anyway, we would classify it as a licensed game. That brings us to this week's pick. It's not Street Fighter, the movie, the game. That's a hint for you. Let the questioning begin.
Is it a licensed game?
No.
Oh.
Well, it's not Street Fighter, the movie, the game, then.
Nope. Well, we already knew that, to be fair.
Because we've been losing hard recently.
You've lost 2 weeks in a row.
Oh, yeah. The last time I was on, the game was redacted.
Mm-hmm. People say we need to... Well, one person keeps emphatically saying we need to stop asking if it was on Switch. That's what's screwing us up.
I think that counts as more of like an exhibition game. That's like the Globetrotters. Like that doesn't count against the actual record.
That's fair.
Is this from before 2010?
No.
Well, now we gotta ask. It's too recent. Is this game on the Switch?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Cool. We've narrowed it down to every game. Was
it developed or published by Nintendo?
No.
Did this game originally launch somewhere and then was later ported to Switch? We are doubling down on this Switch thing.
But we know it came out after 2010, so it's not something super old.
Sure, but like Wolfenstein 2, like it came to Switch 2 years later or something like that. And like same with like Doom Eternal. And so that's a...
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, for Mark's question, yes, it was playable on another platform before it was playable on the Switch, Mark.
All right. Okay. It's Skyrim. We're good.
Is this an indie game?
Yes.
Not Skyrim.
Okay. Does this game have 2D graphics?
Yes.
It's not Live Alive. Does this game have pixel art?
No.
Ooh.
All right. So we got to figure out, is it a 2D slashy or 2D shooty? 2D shooty.
Yes, sure.
Or a jumpy. So 2D graphics, no pixel art. Go ahead.
Side scroller or something like that? Is it from that perspective? What do we call that?
Sounds like it.
Well, unless it's top down or who knows what.
Yeah, do you visualize the action in this game from the side?
No.
Oh man, that was so good.
So it is top down something.
I'm looking at this game now. I think I may have to change something.
Whoa.
Uh-oh.
Okay, I'm going to say, actually, I think this game has 3D models in it.
Okay, so we know it's not a side-scroller, but... hold on. So 3D models, but still could.
But it's played from a 2D. We did confirm because you asked.
Right.
It's, so, I mean, I don't know. Like, I can't. It's like cheating to look up screenshots of games, but a lot of 2D games, the models are actually 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have to think about like an example of a game that's not that. Well, okay. So, like Hades, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah. Not that pixel game art.
That game probably has 3D models, even though I don't know if I'd call that game 2D or not.
Is this a roguelike in some format?
Yes. That's 10.
That's a good question.
All right, so it could be Binding of Isaac, could be Hades. Could
be any of those garlic likes, right?
Yeah, could be
except for the pixel ones.
Yeah, it could be a garlic like
Nuclear Throne.
Could be Isaac, could be Hades. I think it's a good chance it's Hades, isn't there?
It could be.
Does this game have any sequels?
Yes.
Still could be Binding of Isaac.
No. I mean, then a DLC.
Yeah. Oh, true, true.
I don't see any reason that this isn't Hades.
True.
Is there romance in Hades? I don't know how.
No, there's not. Are there like gods of Olympus in this game?
Yes.
Okay, it's Hades. We did.
Is it made by Supergiant Studio? Is it made by Supergiant?
Yes.
Hey.
Is it Hades?
It is Hades. Yes. Yeah, it's like isometric view. I think the character models are 3D, but you don't control the camera.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's also, I was originally thinking about the portraits, which are all 2D, you know.
Yeah.
Character portraits.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Supergiant.
Yeah.
One of the greatest.
They don't miss.
I mean,
they don't miss.
It started with Bastion.
Yeah. Right? A great game.
Transistor is great.
Yep.
And even.
And then
Pyre Is that what that one was called?
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to name drop. Mm-hmm. It's like Pyre was like, I actually don't know. I get the impression it was kind of a flop, but I have a real soft spot for that game. I loved Pyre.
I like Pyre a lot.
They definitely like, I mean, Bastion was like huge when it came to like Xbox Arcade and stuff like that. But it's like, it's clear that Hades was like, I mean, that was their game of the year. I mean, it was our game of the year, 2020.
Yeah.
And so not a surprise to see a sequel to this game. But I will say, just going back to our Xbox talk, like the people that like Logan Cunningham did the, he was the narrator in Bastion. Hmm. He still voices characters in Hades too. He is in all of their games. Darren Korb does the audio and for all of their games, the two studio leads. Like, it's just like, it's, they all just voice their own games and just kind of just like, just they all kind of look the same, but they're all great. I love it. They're a great studio.
Keeping the band together can result in incredible art.
Well, nicely job. Thank you for the suggestion. Who was this from? David from Omaha. Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@IGN.com. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Mark. Thank you to Jobert working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.